Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, Mama, I'm in fear for my life from the long arm of the law.
Got miles to go before we sleep.
Lawman is putting an end to my running, and I'm so far from my
home. We will not go gently. We're going to unleash hell here in December.
Oh, Mama, I can hear you a-crying. You're so scared and all alone.
Hey, somebody fix this guy's buckle. I know he can play football.
He's coming down from the gallows, and I don't have very long.
Ladies and gentlemen of Steeler Nation, welcome back to another edition of The Standard is the Standard, the BehindTheSteelCurtain.com podcast. We have a lot to talk about tonight. We're going to talk about the highlights and the lowlights of the Week 7 loss to the Kansas City Chiefs. We're going to talk about Ben Roethlisberger's potential return. He is saying something that's completely different from what Mike Tomlin's saying. We're going to talk about what that might mean here in a second. But as always, I'm joined by my co-host, Lance Williams. Lance, how are you this evening, my friend?
Bring on the bungles, baby. Bring on the bungles. It's bungles time. It's bungles
time. Hey, it's tough to call them the bungles when they're undefeated and they're one of the best teams in the conference. But nonetheless, I think that it's prudent that we talk a little bit about the Chiefs game. And before we talk about anything, I would like to say that if you want to call and be a part of the show, you can do so. It's 347-850-8581. That's 347-850-8581. Our producer, Chris Carter, will get you on the line. He'll get you set up, and then we'll get you on as soon as we can. So, knee-jerk reaction, Lance, after the Week 7 loss to the Kansas City Chiefs, what was your initial reaction? I know you predicted this loss. I didn't. What were your thoughts?
We're going to, I'm going to give you my imitation of, said player. We didn't execute well enough. We didn't tackle well enough. We didn't do the things that were necessary for us to do what we needed to do to win the game. We just have to make more plays. Steeler fans, they're 2-2 with Ben Roethlisberger out of the lineup. The only reason why I think Steeler fans are upset is because most Steeler fans think they should have won the Raven game. Because they didn't win the Raven game, you know, they would have been 3-1. They would have been a better position going into the game against the Cincinnati Bengals.
Yeah, I hear you. But fans are going to be fickle no matter what. Are you happy with the 2-2 wins?
You know, the 2-2 wins, look, there's enough games left in the season if you handle your business on Sunday that, you know, 5-3, they're 6-1. You're still 2 games back. I mean, there's so much football left that, you know, if you go 7-2 over the next 9, it's all good. If you go 6-3 over the next 9, it's all good. The solution is the same either way. You've got to win ball games. If you don't win ball games, you're not going to make it to the playoffs anyway. So stack some wins and handle your business. It's still all out there in front of them with 2 games against against Cincinnati, and with 9 games remaining. So, yeah, I mean, they'd like to be 5-2. That would be better, but they're still in the okay position.
Well, you know, I wrote an article for BehindTheSteelCurtain.com shortly after the loss. I want to say I ran it on Monday, which is saying that if the Steelers have earned anything so far, and it's been a very turbulent start to the season, they still have control. And they might not have control over the division, especially depending on how this game goes this week. But even with a loss this week, they're still in control of a lot of factors in that AFC playoff picture. Unless they completely fall apart, there's a good chance that this team is in the driver's seat. I'm not saying they're going to make the playoffs, but the probabilities, basically, they're pointing to the fact that the Steelers very well could get to the postseason and be at least a wild card team. And I know we talked off the air, this could be a very dangerous wild card team if they get into the postseason. And that's a long ways away, and we're not going to go too far back. But I want to say to Landry Jones, because I didn't get to do the postgame show as I normally do after the Kansas City Chiefs loss. A lot of people want to pin this loss on him. And, yeah, he missed some throws, but this loss was not on Landry Jones, in my opinion. It was more on the defense, if anything. Such horrendous tackling, the inability to put pressure on the quarterback, and to really just move Alex. It's Alex Smith, man. I mean, it was really frustrating to watch such a mediocre offensive unit in the Kansas City Chiefs just kind of move the ball at will. It wasn't until, I want to say, close to the third quarter that they even forced a punt. What did you think? Week 7, loss, Kansas City Chiefs. What are your takeaways? Who were some players that maybe stood out as bad, as good, whatever?
You know, obviously the tackling was bad. I just look at the unit as a whole. And when you look at this unit, you know, I don't know if you guys listening to the show remember the cartoon Voltron, when all of the Lions formed, I think it was Lions and Voltron, when they all formed together, they became Voltron. Individually, they had their strengths, but when all the pieces came together, they formed this mighty robot, of course, Voltron. This defense is sort of like that. When you take off any of its key components, so Tua didn't play. Hayward's a very good player in and of himself, but he's that much better when Stephon Tua plays. And they're that much better when they play together as a unit. You add Tua to it, you play closer to full strength with all your pieces together, then that defense is the defense that you saw against the Arizona Cardinals. But it's not deep enough. It doesn't have enough depth and enough good players to where if a Tua goes out or a Hayward is out or a Blake is out or anyone is out, except for maybe Jarvis Jones, then you see a great you see the impact of it. So disappointing, though. You would think that they would tackle better. You would think that this was an offense that they could handle with no Charles, no Macklin, even if it's on the road. I expect the defense to play a lot better. And just overall, I'm just disappointed with the entire unit, not a particular individual, but the tackling. And it's just what you see across the National Football League. I watch a lot of different games. I try to watch all of the opponents that the Steelers are going to play. Plus, as a fan, I just try to keep a pulse on the league and just watch some other games in general. And it's not just the Steelers' problem. There's only maybe two teams that I've seen that I think tackle pretty well, and that's Denver and Seattle. And Seattle's even had its issues. So, you know, the tackling was bad. The performance was bad. They looked a little flat. I think overall it was just a disappointing performance in total by everyone on that defense.
You're right. And we have a couple callers that have been on hold. We're going to bring these gentlemen on the air. Our favorite caller is up first. We have Vito from New Jersey. What's up, Vito? How's it going?
Gentlemen, good evening. How are you?
Doing great, Vito.
Well, I guess when you think about the defensive performance last week, and this was running through my mind that game, I guess it's not easy to be great every week. I mean, even though you may work hard and put the effort forth, I guess it's not always easy to be great every week because, you know, quarterbacks have bad games, receivers have bad games, defensive units are going to have bad games. Correct me if I'm wrong.
No, I think you're exactly right, Vito. It's one of those situations where even the best defenses that you can think of, and that can go back to, I don't know, the 2008 Steelers, they had these games that were just, they weren't that good, and they were mediocre at best. And those, we're talking about defenses there that are very, very talented. And as Lance just alluded to, this defense does not have the depth at certain positions, the defensive line being one of them, where they can just have an injury like Stephon Tua goes out and then the next person just plugs in and plays. We know Cam Thomas, what he can and can't do, and it's not much. You have those injuries, and they've been lucky. They've been very fortunate with guys like Sean Spence and Vince Williams filling in for Shazier in his absence. The fact that James Harrison is still able to get the job done when Jarvis Jones missed the game. The fact that Will Allen filled in admirably, I guess started, and then he goes down, and now Robert Golden fills in and has played well. It's kind of a hodgepodge group. And, yeah, you can expect down games. Now it might have been a game where if Ben Roethlisberger's a quarterback, and I hate saying that if, maybe the offense carries that team to the victory. But with Landry Jones a quarterback, that's not always the case. Lance, what are your thoughts on Vito's question? If you didn't hear it, because I know we lost your call for a second, he just was like, you know, is that just the case of the defense having a bad game, or is it more along the lines of this could be a growing trend?
I think it's a week-to-week defense for some of the reasons that you described, Jeff. I think we all thought the defense was going to be the weak link, and I still think it is the weak link of this team, but we thought it would be a bigger or more of a weak link. And I'm satisfied with how the defense is playing 7 weeks into the season. I thought it was going to be a really porous unit. I didn't think they'd be able to get good pressure. And I didn't have a strong feeling of how the secondary would play this year. And the secondary has been up and down. And I didn't know if this would be a defense that would get turnovers. And what we've seen this year, they've been able to get pressure. They've been able to generate turnovers. And they've been a stingy scoring defense. So I still think the glass is, you know, half full when it comes to this defense. I just think because of the lack of depth and because you don't have a ton of superstars on this defense that you're going to see some uneven performances. And that's fine. You just don't want as a defense to give it up and force the offense to have to score 45 points. You don't want those 35-point outings where the defense has to be perfect. This defense still, with that offense with Ben back, still has some margin for error, and I still think it can be a defense that can support a championship run. It just has to stay healthy and have all of its components in play.
That answer your question, Vito?
Yeah, well, I agree. I guess, you know, because if you think back to against the Rams, remember the offense wasn't really moving the ball before Ben went down. Is that correct?
But they were moving the ball. They just weren't scoring touchdowns, and that was the big difference. If you remember the first two drives, Roethlisberger marched the team right up down the field on and made the Rams, which is a very stout defense, look very mediocre, and they just stalled in the red zone. So,
that's
definitely going to be something to watch.
Yeah. Now I'm a little concerned about Ben this week because you know what? We don't know if he's 100%, and we don't know if he's coming back a week or two too early. So I think the problem could be the coaching staff feels he's ready to go because they don't want to lose any more games. But, you know, I would hate to rush this guy back and then he gets pounded on this week by the Bengals and then all of a sudden he can't play for another couple of games. So that's a concern for me.
What do you think about that, Lance?
Well, think of it this way, Vito. Assume two things. He's probably not fully healthy and won't be for the rest of the year. And they're rushing him back early, and they're trying not to lose the season. You know, they're not in the business of forfeiting seasons necessarily for the health of one particular player. And neither is Ben Roethlisberger. So Ben is going to push it if he's close because he realizes he's in the last third of his career. You know, how many opportunities is he going to have to win rings? So he's going to push it. So, you know, we should be concerned as fans, but you're right. They're absolutely pushing it. They don't want to lose to the Bengals and let this season potentially be at risk because of the injury. So I think they're hedging their bet. They think it's been enough time to where he can protect himself and he can come back. Although, and we're going to talk about it, his comments don't necessarily support the coaches, which is interesting.
Yeah, and I'm not necessarily on that bandwagon of she's not ready. I don't think that when you're talking about ligament damage in a knee, they're not going to put him out there in a situation where he could do further damage. It's just not going to happen. Not with Ben Roethlisberger, even in the twilight of his career, not with all of that stuff. I think that the Steelers are smart enough that they realize, look, even if they were to not play him this week and lose to the Cincinnati Bengals, they can still make a run and they need him healthy. They're not going to play this guy. And if you think about it, this is the first real interior structural damage that he's had done to his knee. He's had his knee hyperextended before. He's never had an ACL or anything like that. He's had all those other myriad of injuries from the chest, shoulder injury, to the thumb and all that stuff. I think that this just kind of scared him a little bit, and we're going to talk about those comments he made earlier. Vito, thanks for the phone call. We appreciate it, as always. Enjoy the game this Sunday. Let's get to our next caller. We got Stephen Callimer from Waynesboro, Pennsylvania. Go ahead.
Hey, how are you guys tonight?
Doing good.
Doing good.
Good. My thoughts, I just want to get your thoughts on if you see this. Pains me to say this, but it seems to me, even as good as Lawrence Timmons has been, and he still is, he you know, he's our veteran, and he's smart, and we definitely need him, but it seems that he might have lost a step. And the reason I say that is over the last couple games, I think to be the cream of the crop in the AFC, if you look at the dominant teams, they all have dominant tight ends. We have to cover the tight end, and we ain't been able to. If you look at the numbers, on third down, this team, this defense has given up 26.6 yards a play on third downs for like 80% completion rate. And up the middle, in the seam, whether it was Gronk in week one against New England or Kelce last week or Gates or Ladarius Green, no matter who it is, we cannot cover them. And it's the same scheme every game. It's always Lawrence Timmons one-on-one and that zone coverage, you know, on man against that tight end, you can't cover him. It's like, to me, we have to be able to cover these guys to win in the playoffs. I mean, even talking about the playoffs right now is kind of crazy to me because it's not a guarantee. Even though Ben's coming back this week, we all think that, you know, it's automatically we're going to hang 30 or 35. I mean, just like the previous caller said, in that St. Louis game, we wasn't scoring in that game before he went down. There's no guarantee that Ben comes out in a rhythm and we score 30 to 35 points. I mean, I do like our chances. We're at home. It's basically a must-win game if we want any chance to win this division. And I don't know, man. Just the overall pass defense is horrendous. You know, there's some bright spots. I think we're ranked 6th in the league in sacks. And, 10th in points allowed a game, giving up like 18.7 a game, which they're the stat. I mean, points allowed is what really matters. But how long is that going to last if we cannot defend the pass? I mean, eventually we're going to face Tom Brady. These quarterbacks that eat these zones up and do this, we're going to have to beat these quarterbacks sometime. And, I mean, once again, as much as it pains me to say this because I hate New England, I mean, I just don't see it, man. Bill Belichick out-coaches Mike Tomlin all the time, man. I mean, it happens over and over again in my book. And I just don't see how it's going to happen. I mean, we all want it to happen, but it's like, well, like you said, I mean, the defense ain't going to be spectacular every week, but Antoine Blake, he's not a starter. I mean, it's plain to see whether – I don't care what Tomlin says. He's doing good. He's playing well. That's just crazy. I mean, if you go look at the numbers and what he's given up, it's just ridiculous. What's your guys' thoughts on that?
Well, and caller, did you just post those numbers on Twitter? I thought I saw that tweet a few minutes ago about the third down conversion stuff and the yards in the seam. I think I saw you
just posted that.
Tight ends, you know, them covering tight ends has been an issue. I mean, you can either solve it a couple of ways. You can try to solve it schematically, or you could try to solve it personnel-wise. One thing that's interesting to me is Shazier, to me, is still undisciplined in pass coverage. It'll be interesting if Butler tries to solve the issue of tight ends with Shazier in pass coverage. So you might be able to get it that way. As far as giving up yards, and I'm in agreement with you, although they're 10th in scoring defense, at some point in time, bend not break does break, and you can't continue to give up a ton of yards and hope to be stout in the red zone. Because if you don't get turnovers, at some point, giving up that many yards is going to get you. But I still think the defense is better, even though it's struggling in areas than I anticipated, and I still think that many Steeler teams or Steeler fans anticipated. It's a flawed team from that sense. I mean, the strength is clearly with the offense, and if they're going to go far, the offense is going to have to be hot and it's going to have to cook consistently. What do you think, Jeff?
Yeah, I mean, the defense has issues. And like you said, Steven, it's one of those issues where the tight end has been an issue, not just this year. It's been an issue in the past few seasons as well. And whether Butler has an idea to kind of schematically work it out, you know, you talk about Gronkowski week one, that defense looked like a dumpster fire. I mean, they didn't know what they were doing. They left him uncovered. I definitely have seen improvement. And I think that's the key for this defensive unit is improvement. And if it's with Antoine Blake, because let's be honest, there's some information that we, you, me, Lance, are not privy to. And one of those is, why is Antoine Blake playing? And a lot of people have that question. He seems to be the whipping boy recently among Steeler Nation, but nonetheless, he is playing. So you just hope to see some improvement with Antoine Blake. You hope to see his coverage skills improve. You hope to see the tackling improve. And you hope to figure that Butler's going to come up with a scheme or whether he's going to have or Shazier, like Lance alluded to, cover the tight end. You just have to have hope that they're going to figure it out. Now, like you said, the playoffs, that talk is very premature, and I know we let off the show mentioning that. The probability and the odds are out there, but at the same time, they still have to perform and win these games. And I think this Sunday is going to be a great test for this team in a lot of aspects. I mean, the Cincinnati Bengals have a lot of weapons. They have a very good athletic tight end in Tyler Eifert, as well as A.J. Green, that can stretch the field, and two running backs that are just really, really good. So I definitely see your concern, Stephen. We appreciate the phone call. And make sure you keep listening and call back and enjoy the game on Sunday. Anyone else that would like to call in, you can do so. The phone lines are open, 347-850-8581. Again, it's 347-850-8581. I'd like to kind of put this thing in reverse, Lance, and go back to Ben Roethlisberger for a second. Because I think it's appropriate that we talk about this. And for those that might not be completely in the know of what's going on, in week 7 leading up to that game, it was very optimistic from Ben Roethlisberger and his camp. In other words, Ben Roethlisberger was saying, you know what, I think I'm good enough to play. I'm going to practice. I'm going to be a full participant. We're going to see how the knee responds. And it, lo and behold, rumors, or I should say reports, come out now that it was Thursday, that practice, where essentially he tweaked his knee, or I guess he overworked his knee, and now all of a sudden they're saying that there was inflammation, there was increased pain, and the doctors looked at it and said there's no structural damage to the MCL ligament or any re-injury of the bone bruise. It's just going to happen when you increase your workload. So I think that kind of scared Roethlisberger a little bit. So now we go to week 8 leading up to the Bengals game. Mike Tomlin, in his Tuesday press conference, he actually goes on and says, we're moving forward with Roethlisberger. He's going to be our guy unless there's a setback. And then today, Ben Roethlisberger meets with the media prior to practice and basically says, well, let's pump the brakes on the guarantee that I'm going to be playing. You know, I had this setback last week. I'm not sure how my knee's going to respond. I want to play on Sunday. I hope that I can play on Sunday, but he's not going to guarantee anything. Lance, when you heard this kind of swing, and Dale Lally, of the Washington Observer reporter, put this on Twitter, it's very perfect. He said, it's kind of like good cop, bad cop. You know, week 7, Tomlin's the bad cop, Roethlisberger's a good cop. And then in week 8 leading up to the Bengals game, it's the flip-flop of roles. And now all of a sudden, good cop, bad cop. It just seems like that's what's going on. What do you make of this whole situation? Do you think it's just smoke and mirrors and for the Bengals?
I never
know. Do you
know.
Think that there's actual – or do you think it's concern for the actual knee ligament, the joint, all that stuff?
I'm trying to be a hip-hop answer to a lot of these questions. Some sort of phrase when it pops into my head. Listeners, I don't know if you know the song by the Loonies that came out in the 90s. I got five on it. Let me just say this. If I got five on it, Ben's playing on Sunday, period. And I don't know what the late media reports, who it serves, or because I know Tomlin was being criticized that Ben was actually ready to play. I never know about this musical chairs and this stuff with the – he's playing on Sunday, period. If he can go and they think he can go, Seven is putting on the uniform. He's going to have that bumblebee on Sunday, slanging it against the Bungles. He understands the importance of this game. But like you said, the Steelers also understand his importance to the franchise this year and moving forward. They're not going to put it at risk. But they are going to push the envelope. They're going to get it as close as possible. You know, like if he really thinks he can play and the doctors are like, yeah, we think he can play, he can go, he'll be okay. But another week he'd be awesome, he's going to play this week. And I think that's what the situation is. He's going to suit up. Sometimes these press conferences are weird and it's kind of hard to discern what the message is. So instead of me being manipulated by it, I'll take everybody's bet listening to the show, holla at your boy. Number Seven is playing on Sunday starting in fantasy.
You're not alone in that sentiment. Ed Bouchette of the Post Gazette, Mark Lally of the Tribune Review have all basically said via social media that, look, Roethlisberger's playing Sunday, period. Barring a re-injury or something that's not, okay, he's sore and his knee might be swollen a little bit, but that's going to happen when you come back from an injury like that. I think with Roethlisberger, it comes down to what's it going to look like? I want to say that yesterday I was listening to Dale Lally and Jerry Dulac on Steelers Nation Radio, and I want to say that Dale Lally, now don't quote me on this, but I'm pretty sure that he had a stat that any time that Roethlisberger has missed more than one game, when he has come back, the Steelers are 2-4. It was a losing record. It might not have been 2-4, but they have a losing record. He made a good point, though, and he said, this is the first injury that Roethlisberger has had where when he comes back to the lineup, he's actually able to ease himself back into the lineup. And I think back to, I think it was 2011, Roethlisberger has a bad high ankle sprain, and they're getting ready to play on Monday Night Football against the San Francisco 49ers at Candlestick Park. This is the game where the lights went out halfway through, and he really rushed his way back onto the field. And a lot of times that leads to a really awkward Roethlisberger, meaning he's not as good in terms of moving. He's thinking too much about the potential injury, the potential severe injury. For instance, if you think about an ankle, if it gets worse, is it going to be easy to be out for longer? And ultimately, when you do something like that, it takes more time for that player to get back. Now, this injury is a little bit different. When he gets that injury, they know, look, you're going to be out 4 to 6 weeks. He's able to rehab. He's able to kind of come back on his own schedule. He's been working his way back through practice the past 2 weeks now. He was a full participant today. Tomorrow is going to be the injury report to keep an eye on, because tomorrow is going to be, okay, how did his knee respond to the workout that he did Wednesday? If he's a full participant tomorrow and all reports are the same as they were Wednesday, it essentially means Roethlisberger's knee responded well, he's able to go again. And that's what you're going to have to do for probably the rest of this week, and then hopefully he gets through Saturday and he's good, and then he's ready to play on Sunday. But I don't think there's any way, especially if you look at this, they have a 3-game homestand coming up. They have Cincinnati this week, Oakland next week, Cleveland the week after that. The Pittsburgh Steelers want to go 3-0 in this stretch. They want to advance their record to 7-3 and really be in a driver's seat then. Not only to put pressure on the AFC North division, but also just to kind of solidify themselves as contenders in the AFC. I think you're right, Lance. But let's take a look at that overall injury report today. If you didn't see it, remember, folks, if you're not listening live, this is a Wednesday show, so the Wednesday injury report had players like Heath Miller, James Harrison, Matt Spade. They got the veterans' day off. Tomlin likes to do that about midway through the year. Terrence Garvin with a knee injury has already been ruled out for this Sunday, so he's out. And then you have Mike Vick was limited, as well as Will Allen. So Will Allen is working his way back from his ankle injury, although I doubt both of those will be active on Sunday. And then you had Roethlisberger was a full participant, whereas Stephon Tuitt, William Gay were also out with their respective injuries. I think the key injury here, there's two of them, mainly Stephon Tuitt. When I wrote the injury report today for the website, Lance, I talked about how Tuitt is kind of like that glue along that defensive front that keeps everything together. And it would be the same if Hayward were out. They need this guy back in the lineup, and if he doesn't get to practice soon, it's not going to happen. And against the dual running back threat of the Cincinnati Bengals, it could mean trouble. What do you think about these injuries as we move forward towards Cincinnati?
I would agree. They got Tua has to be back for them to have, you know, a fighting chance on the defensive side of football. With him back, he helps to stabilize the running game, and he helps in getting pressure. He's a key cog to what they want to do defensively, and they need to have him back. But answer this question for me, Jeff. Is Tomlin hard and fast like Cowher used to be? If you don't practice on Friday, you don't play? Is that a Tomlin rule like Cowher?
Pretty much. I don't think it's as hard as, you know, Cowher was. Look, you don't practice Friday, you don't play, period. I think that a lot of times Tomlin will list the player as a limited participant to kind of keep that door open. It's definitely different. They're very similar in a lot of ways, but it's definitely different. It's not really a hardcore answer to your question or a hard line on your question, but it is different. I think it is, personally.
Well, if he doesn't go, again, you know, he's going to really impact just how effective that defense is, because when they played the Chiefs, that Chiefs offensive line is really bad. I mean, it was a really bad front. You know, and Sharif Floyd is an average player, in my opinion, highly drafted. But I think Stephon Tuitt at this point, if you compare the two guys, I think Tuitt's the better player than Sharif Floyd. And Sharif Floyd threw a party in the backfield. I mean, he was popping bottles back there. And he was getting his Ciroc drink on back in the backfield against the Chiefs. So, you know, the lack of Tuitt in this game against a solid defense, you know, solid offensive line of the Cincinnati Bengals is going to be key. And the Steelers trying to get this win on Sunday.
Yeah, it is going to be key. And then also William Gay in the secondary, you know, he's got that shoulder contusion, which I was surprised. What I've come to learn is that when Mike Tomlin labels an injury on Monday or Tuesday at his press conference, don't really listen to it. If you think, look at Ryan Shazier since he's been in the NFL. Think back to the training camp knee injury that he had as a rookie, which Tomlin labeled as a boo-boo, meaning a training camp just like a bumps and bruises. Turns out he ends up missing time for that. And then you have the shoulder injury in week 2 against the 49ers, which he labeled as one of those football, the bumps and bruises, football injury. He misses 4 weeks. So here you have William Gay with a shoulder contusion. Now, Gay did tell reporters after practice today that he does plan on practicing tomorrow. But if he doesn't go, it probably will open the door for Brandon Boykin to see more time. And a lot of Steelers fans are really excited for that. I'm not, because I don't want to see William Gay not in the lineup. If I want to see Brandon Boykin in the lineup, it's because he's replacing someone like Cockrell or Blake, not your best defensive back in William Gay. I hope William Gay's healthy enough, because they're going to need him on Sunday to try to lock down players like A.J. Green. I'm excited to see Boykin play more, just like everyone else is, but at the same time, you got to look for what's best in the team. What do you think about that, Lance?
As the Boykin turns, Jeff, answer me this. What's the compensation if he plays, 60% of the snaps?
If he plays 60% or more of the snaps in 2015, then they owe the Philadelphia Eagles a fourth-round draft pick. If he plays 60 or less than 60%, they owe them a fifth-round draft pick.
So, to answer your question, I think you're absolutely right. If Boykin plays, you don't want him to play because Gay is hurt. Gay is clearly their best defensive back, which is scary. It doesn't make me feel gay when I say Gay is the best defensive back. Pastor Boykin. I mean, that was horrible. The reason they won't play Boykin moving forward is because I think both parties have decided Boykin's not going to be in the 2016-2017 season. I don't think Boykin wants to deal with this. They don't value him as a player. So unless he was hurt, and unless they had to win games, playing Boykin on a regular basis is going to be the last result that they do. They don't want to give up fourth-round compensation for a guy that they're not going to bring back. So now the conspiracy theory that callers alluded to that I laughed at earlier in the season, I think is absolutely true at this point going into week 8. But hopefully,
wait a second. You're telling me that when I brought this up like 4 weeks ago, you ridiculed me on the air. I could bring it up if I wanted to. And you ridiculed that these conspiracy theorists are crazy. You're now jumping on board with those tinfoil-wearing people, you know, that wear the tinfoil on their heads talking about the conspiracy theories. You're now one of these people that says it's all about the 60%, really?
Yeah, I'm down with the Mantorian candidate. But see, I didn't think it made sense then because it was too early in the season. Now, I think it absolutely makes sense. I think now, as we've gone along, I think both parties have probably clearly just thought we're going to end this relationship this year. It just, for some reason, it didn't work. I like your point from last week's show when you made the point about if Cockrell was available at the time, they would have signed Cockrell and not Boykin. So I think somehow when they landed Cockrell, Boykin became not so important anymore. And I think Boykin is tired of being a healthy scratch. He's maintaining his professionalism and not yelling and running to the media. And so I think everybody's going to make nice and Boykin will be somewhere else next year. And so
I think it's safe to say that Boykin's probably going to be somewhere else next year. Barring a really shocking change of events in terms of the Steelers showing a lot of interest in him after the season. But Mark Cavalli of the Pittsburgh Tribune Review posted on Twitter that from here on out, I want to say from this game on, if Boykin were to play every single defensive snap, assuming there's an average of about 50 snaps on defense, that he would have over 60% and they would own 40. So if they're going to really look at, okay, we need to get under this 60%, then it would be like midway through this game or next game when they could start playing him more. But I just still don't think that's going to happen. Boykin, like you said it perfectly, ask the Boykin turns. It seems like every week there's something else going on about, you know, Lord knows what. Let's talk about the Cincinnati Bengals now a little bit, Lance. Good boy, you got something else? Hey, go ahead.
Yeah, but that's what we do. I mean, on these shows, sports media, we speculate. Like, we speculate on the speculation. So, you know, as the Boykin turn just provides, you know, more stuff to talk about and speculate about. And even if he comes back, Boykin's not going to be the savior of the secondary. If he was that good, he'd still be in Philadelphia. Well, who knows, with Chip Kelly. But you never know with Chip, you know. But, you know, if he was the be-all, the end-all, presumably, he would still be in Philadelphia making plays, and he wouldn't be a Steeler at this point. So I don't think it's going to make that much of a difference anyway, whether he plays, although he can't play much worse than Blake. So, you know, but we'll see. But hopefully I think, you know, as we're alluding to, the Gay plays on Sunday, and it's a moot point anyway.
Yeah, it's one of those situations that had me shaking my head during the Kansas City game, and it was when Antoine Blake went out with concussion protocol. I'm sure you watched that, you saw that. And so Boykin was then inserted into the game, and he went into the slot. He made a great tackle. He had a pass defense. Blake comes back after the second half, Boykin's back on the bench. And I'm like, man, you got to be kidding me. Like, it's just one of those situations where you put in a guy and he's playing well and you're thinking, okay, maybe they're just going to give him a shot. Nope. Antoine Blake goes back out. He gets targeted early and often, and it's just not pretty. And unfortunately, the issues with the Steelers' defense, and they do give up a lot of yards. And a lot of people, though, are kind of like, oh, my gosh, the Cincinnati Bengals, they're so good. You know, they're undefeated. Well, let's look at Cincinnati's their six victories so far, shall we? They beat the Oakland Raiders in week one, 33-13. They beat the San Diego Chargers in week two, 24-19. They beat the Baltimore Ravens in week three, 28-24. The Chiefs, 36-21. They beat the Seahawks, 27-24, that crazy comeback. And then the last time they played, they beat the Buffalo Bills in Buffalo, 34-21. So that's how they stayed perfect. They've been in a lot of close games. But let's look at how eerily similar these teams are from a statistic standpoint, okay? Defensively, the Pittsburgh Steelers are giving up 99.7 yards on the ground per game. The Cincinnati Bengals are giving up 109.2 yards per game. The Pittsburgh Steelers are giving up 276.9 yards through the air a game. The Cincinnati Bengals are giving up 261.5 yards through the air per game. Add all that together, the Steelers are giving up 376 yards a game. The Cincinnati Bengals are 370 yards a game. And so you look at that, it's very eerily similar between the two defenses. Because I think somehow fans think, oh my gosh, the Cincinnati defense is so good. Geno Atkins, Dunlop, the secondary with all those first-round draft picks. Look, with Ben Roethlisberger, if he's even 75%, this defense does not scare me. Okay, offensively, it's very similar as well, and that's without Roethlisberger the last 4 weeks. Pittsburgh averages 348 yards a game. Cincinnati's 410. I know that's an uptick, but still, Pittsburgh's missing their best player. The Steelers rush for 127 a game. The Bengals are 122 a game. The Steelers pass for 221. The Bengals pass for 288. And they both average, the Steelers average 22.6 points per game. The Bengals average 30.3 again. This is without the Steelers' best offensive player for the last 4 weeks. Why don't you go ahead? I know you have your defensive keys ready to go. Let's get right into it, Lance. Let's talk about some of these defensive keys. What's important for the Steelers' defense?
You know, Jeff, as I heard you go through the stats, you know, I was just thinking about the movie Inside Out. And I don't know if listeners of you guys saw the movie Inside Out. Two of the main characters are Joy and Sadness, right? And on this show, if you listen to it, like Vito does and calls in, pick up Vito, we all know that Jeff is Joy and Lance is Sadness. I went third person. And, you know, hopefully you saw Inside Out. If you have kids like Jeff and I, you probably saw Inside Out, Pixar movie. It's a great movie. Jeff's always Joy. Right. I'm always Sadness. That's just how it works. Right. It kind of works that way.
That is how
What I'm cutting through in all that stuff that Jeff said is, although it looks the same and Jeff kind of glossed over the big difference in points per game, I mean, 30.3 points per game is third in the National Football League. And that's a touchdown more than 22, which is significant. By no small means. You know, if you beat somebody by a touchdown every game, you're probably a juggernaut. But, you know, it's all about matchups. Although the numbers look good, there are some matchups in this game that particularly stand out. And because of the familiarity of the Bengals with the Steelers and vice versa, and because of the Bengals' balance and the way that Andy Dalton is playing this year, this may be even more of a difficult offense to stop than the Patriots or the Cardinals. And I'm not saying that the Steelers can't do it or won't do it. I'm saying it's going to be tough. So the theme, I think, when you look at an offense like Cincinnati, you just have to say to yourself, we can't stop everyone. You know, Dalton right now, 116.1 passer rating, number one in the National Football League, 143.6 passer rating, number one in the fourth quarter, 14 TDs, two interceptions. A.J. Green, 35 catches, 531 yards. averaging 15.2 yards per catch, 7 catches of 20-plus yards, 7th in the NFL. Tyler Eifert, boy, I don't know if it's Tyler Eifert. I'm sorry if I messed his first name up. 28 catches, 342 yards, 6 touchdowns, 1st in the National Football League. Giovanni Bernard averaging 5.5 yards per carry, 5th in the National Football League. And you've got Hill in the mix as well, mixed in with Sanu and Jones. There's a ton of weapons. So I think you can't go into the game thinking, I'm going to take away everything. I think you have to look at it in a Spygadian, Belichickian way. And I think you have to say to yourself, when you look at their offense, what's going to hurt me the least? And I think it's the running game. I think you have to encourage the Cincinnati Bengals to run the football. This is going to be a rope-a-dope game, a bend-not-break game. They're going to have to play really good football in the red zone. But I think you have to encourage the Bengals to run the football because from a matchup standpoint, I think the Steelers' front seven has a much better chance of stopping their running game than any particular matchup between Green against anybody in the secondary or Eifert. So this game to me looks like a cover two, you know, two-man, disguise some cover two, cover three looks where maybe you can rotate at the last minute if you think you need to drop a safety and run support. But I think in most situations you're going to have to defend against the deep hit, the intermediate hit, and the deep hit against A.J. Green. When you look at their weapons, I think the triangle of Dalton, Eifert, and Green is much more dangerous than Hill or Bernard, particularly with Eifert and his ability to make catches and plays in the red zone. He has 6 receptions in the red zone, which is 4th in the National Football League, 3 receptions inside the 10, which is 7th, and I bet those 3 receptions are all for touchdowns, and 21 of his 28 receptions are for first down. So if because you can't stop everything, I think we're going to see a lot more cover two, a lot of two-man, and I think the Steelers are going to encourage the Bengals to run, and they're going to try to stop the Bengals' run with as few resources in the box as possible. Because I think if you're in a situation where you can't handle their run with 7 and you have to drop a safety and dedicate a safety in the hole consistently, you're in trouble because that's when Eifert and A.J. Green will absolutely go nuts because there's no help for either one of those players. So I think it's a rope-a-dope game, bend-not-break game. And I think you want to encourage them to run, but they're going to have to get turnovers in this game as well. Because I just think Cincinnati, especially if Tua doesn't play, is going to have a lot of action. And because of Eifert, I think it's going to be tough in the red zone and trying to defend him. So I think the Steeler defense, particularly if Tua does not play, is going to have its hands full.
Yeah, I agree with you. I would say the thing, the only thing that it comes out in my mind is, really, the caller that called, Steven that called earlier, he alluded to this, that the defense is not going to change much, like you said. You know, schematically, they might try some, cover two, cover three looks and disguise some stuff. That's natural. They're going to give up yardage. They're going to let them move down the field. They're going to give up drives. They're not going to force three and outs on every possession. What you hope is that they stiffen in the red zone and that they force them to kick a lot of field goals. And that's been their MO all year. And you just hope that with Eifert and all those other weapons, they can do that. Do you think they can do that enough to win the football game, Lance?
I mean, I think they're going to give up, minimum 21 to 24 points. I still think this is a game with the Steelers win that the Steeler offense is going to have to score 30 points to win. So
okay.
As long as they keep them under 30, I don't think this is going to be a low-scoring game. I think both offenses are going to find some success because you're right about that Bengals defense. you know, I've seen Seattle run against them pretty well. I saw Buffalo run against them pretty well. And I don't think that secondary is that great. Kilpatrick is okay. Denard is a young player. And Pac-Man Jones is in a shutdown corner. And we saw what Martavis Bryant did to Leon Hall last year. And don't be surprised if they're going to try to get to that matchup as soon as possible in the game
yeah.
on Sunday.
I mean, absolutely.
They're going to try to get to that. Well, they're going to try to get to that immediately.
Yeah, and this is a perfect segue into what the offense needs to do. And this is assuming that Roethlisberger is going to play. And like you said, you're going to put five on him that he's going to play. Well, I'd put 10 on it that he's going to play. And I think that they're going to make sure that he is safe in this game. And what I mean by that is expect a heavy dose of Le'Veon Bell. Le'Veon Bell has historically, in his short time in the NFL, run very well against the Cincinnati Bengals. He is a player that has worked them in the through as a receiver as well as on the ground. And he has shown that he can run the football on any defense, regardless of how many people you have in the box. And you saw it against the Chargers, you saw it against the Cardinals, and you saw it again against the Chiefs. When they put everyone in their brother in the box, he was still able to get his yardage. Now, in the red zone, that's a different story. But other than that, Le'Veon Bell has proven, and I wrote an article today about this, that 2014, that was no fluke. This guy, he missed the first two games of the 2015 season due to suspension and is leading the AFC in rushing. Think about that for a second. He's fifth, I think, on the NFL rushing list, and he missed two games, people. And those were two games where he saw his teammate, D'Angelo Williams, rush for 127 against New England and 77 and three touchdowns against San Francisco. What do you think Le'Veon Bell would have done to those defenses? It would have been scary. So I think that he's going to have a heavy, heavy hand in this game. And then with Roethlisberger, they're going to pick their spot, look for him to get those quick-hitting passes. The one thing about the knee is it's not going to change that once he three-step drops out of his hand. It's just not going to change that much. As long as he has the ability to plant his leg, he'll be fine, and he'll be able to hit those passes. And then hopefully play action with the protection and the offensive line, and you got to make sure that Heath Miller's going to be back there helping out Alejandro Villanueva. I think that he's going to be able to take some shots down the field. But again, I said this with your defense. It's the same in the offense. It's going to come down to the red zone. Pittsburgh is going to get opportunities. They're going to move the football. But what do they do in the red zone when it counts the most? And I think this is where having Martavis Bryant back on the field, especially with Ben Roethlisberger, a quarterback, is really going to help. Because what they'll probably do, and you'll see this a lot, they'll motion Le'Veon Bell out of the backfield and then look for Martavis Bryant to get single one-on-one coverage on the outside. And Ben Roethlisberger throws a great fade pass. And who else would you want to see in the NFL go up for a fade other than Martavis Bryant? Maybe Calvin Johnson. He's up there in, like, rarefied air right now. This guy scored, I want to say, 11 touchdowns in his first 12 games. It's ridiculous. The Steelers have playmakers. Expect them to use them. I think that this is a matchup that favors Pittsburgh in terms of offense versus defense. I like Pittsburgh's offense against Cincinnati's defense, for sure. I have no qualms about that. And I think that Cincinnati's saying the same thing on the other side of the coin, that they like their matchup against the Steelers' defense. I think that you're right, Lance. This is going to be a game that is going to be more of the high-scoring variety. I'd be stunned if this game finishes with the final score of 23-17 or 24-a game under 30. I think this is going to be, if there's going to be one that's going to be high flying, it's going to be this one. What do you think about that offense going against Cincinnati's defense?
I think, you know, clearly with Ben playing, I think I'd have to favor the Steelers offense, sure. I think Cincinnati's defense is better because I think the front four, the defensive line, is better, especially when you include Dunlop and Johnson. And Geno Atkins is back. Geno is back, and I hate the matchup of Geno Atkins against Cody Wallace. I absolutely hate it. That is so tilted in the favor of the Bengals that it's going to be tough. Although, like you correctly pointed out, they've still been able to run the ball pretty effectively with Le'Veon Bell, although they're blocking it up with Cody Wallace. You know, the one thing I think that makes this game for the Steelers is that home field advantage. And, you know, you just got to think, at some point in time, Bad Andy, he has to show up you know, but when I watch Eddie Dalton, he's playing the best ball I've ever seen. And one of the big improvements I've seen in Eddie Dalton is his accuracy on the deep ball. He's throwing the deep ball really well. And knowing Hugh Jackson, if you're watching Blake on film, they're going to try to get after the candy bar as quickly as the Steelers are going to try to go against Leon Hall. I think the over for the game is 48.5 for you degenerates out there gambling the game. Make sure you check. It's going to be over 48.5. Both of these defenses, these offenses are going to move the football. Not necessarily easy all the time, but they're going to be able to move it, I think, comfortably. And like you said, it's going to come down to a small play here and there, particularly in the red zone, or quite possibly in special teams.
Yeah. Hey, look at week 17 of last year. It was Antonio Brown's punt return that kind of kickstarted the Steelers to win that game against the Cincinnati Bengals at Heinz Field. We have a caller waiting to get on the air. We have Melvin from Dallas, Texas, wants to talk about Le'Veon Bell. What's up, Melvin?
What's going on, Jeff? What's going on, Lance? I hit you up real quick, Lance, on Twitter the other day. Appreciate
yeah,
the shout-out.
Yeah, I saw that. I saw that. I saw that. Thanks for calling in.
Hey, man, my only thing with Le'Veon is what I miss Le'Veon Bell on third down split out. You remember when Le'Veon was catching just about everything and we were talking about how prolific of a receiving running back he is? I don't see that anymore. Going back to Kansas City, when D'Angelo dropped that crucial pass, you know, love D'Angelo to death.
Drop.
He's done well. That's Le'Veon. You need to have Le'Veon doing that. Because that's what I can't remember Le'Veon dropping a ball coming out of the backfield. And, you know, as far as being me, I'm like you guys. I think it's going to be a lot of quick passes, a lot of three-step drops. I can very easily see Martavius Bryant on Hall. 1, 2, 3, go get it. 1, 2, 3, go get it. You know, then we're going to get the slip screen and the bubble screen that everybody hates. But there's one man that we got to go get back to. What happened to that guy? We don't utilize him where we haven't with Landry and Vic. We haven't utilized him. I think he's going to be crucial. Defensively, if Tua's out, I mean, I'm like you, Lance. Just pick your poison. You know, as a defense, just say, you know what? AJ Green's not going to beat me today. Somebody else is going to beat me today if somebody's going to beat me. But it's not going to be AJ Green. You know, if you want to make up your mind and say, okay, they're not going to run the ball, then pick your poison, make your decision, stand by it, and if one of the other receivers has a good day that day, you tip your hat and be like, okay, you know, he made his money that day. But I really do think that you just need to make a decision, stick by it, and when you run in that zone, like one of those third down passes to the tight end against Kansas City, William Gay is in perfect position. But when you're running zone, at least what I was taught when I played, you continue to get depth. If there's nobody, and I really thought that was what you do when you run a zone, you get depth, you let them catch the ball in front of you, and then you cross your fingers that somebody's going to come up and tackle, because we know that the Steelers, as well as Lance pointed out earlier, the NFL, they're not tackling as well as they used to. I think they have something to do with CBA, and they don't hit anymore during practice. But, you know, that's just some of my takes on it, man. What do you guys think?
I think you answered your question when you said Landry and Vic. I think once Ben gets back, I think you'll see Heath Miller back into the game plan. I think they use Heath primarily in the running game and in protection. And I think with Le'Veon coming out of the backfield, I think they feel comfortable with Ben back there that they can protect it well enough and he can get it out quick enough to be able to get it to Le'Veon and not have any protection issues. Plus, I think with Ben out, Le'Veon had to support the offense in the running game because they had to protect both quarterbacks from their ability to turn the football over. So I think the offense will look different, extremely different with Ben back. And I think they're right. You know, you get depth, you tackle the catch. But the problem with tackling the catch now is that tackling is so bad, and it's such a high completion league that sometimes you can get burnt by it. You saw the Steelers get burnt by it in Kansas City. What's your thoughts, Jeff?
Well, I'll talk about the offensive side of the ball. I tend to be more of an offensive-minded guy when I watch the game of football. If you just speaking of that particular play, and that was a big drop by D'Angelo Williams, if you watch that play again, it was Le'Veon Bell who was split out wide, who went into motion, and then they flipped D'Angelo Williams out of the backfield off of that motion, and the play worked. I mean, if he catches the football, it works, and you're right, Le'Veon Bell rarely drops a pass. He has dropped a few in his career, but not many. I think that when you talked about Heath Miller, what happened to Heath Miller? Well, Kelvin Beachum's ACL is what happened to Heath Miller. When you have to put Alejandro Villanueva out there, you're going to need your best blocking tight end. And although that is typically Matt Spades, Heath Miller is going to be that guy that's going to add versatility. Matt Spades isn't going to catch many passes, if any at all. And so that's going to be Heath Miller that's going to be out there to kind of protect that left side. Le'Veon Bell, it's exactly what Lance said. You'll see Le'Veon Bell now as split out in the slot. You'll see him as a wide receiver with Roethlisberger back in their center. But with Landry Jones and especially Michael Vick, I think that Todd Haley wanted him as a safety valve back in the backfield for a pass play that breaks down. If he gets just behind the line, they can dump it off to him. If he's out in the passing pattern, Michael Vick especially was a sitting duck. And so I think that the Steelers' offense now, finally, and it's hard to believe that we're going into week eight, and just now, if Ben Roethlisberger plays, and everyone thinks that he will, and I'm one of those people, will be the first time in 2015 they will have their full complement of skill players on the field. Antonio Brown, Heath Miller, Martavis Bryant, Le'Veon Bell, all of them, Ben Roethlisberger, obviously, will be healthy and on the field. So it'll be interesting. I'm excited to see what this team can do. I hope the offensive line can protect well enough to keep Ben clean. And I think they can light up the scoreboard, Melvin. I really do.
I think Villanueva did a comparable job. Yeah, everybody sees that last sack on Tom Ali. But really, I thought Villanueva did a pretty good job. I just hate that, you know, when you're 6'7" and you're that tall and you end up bending over and you get your weight over your feet, that's what's going to happen. Every time you're going to get beat with that speed rush. But, you know, when I called in last week, I'm talking about check down Alex. Yeah, we should take care of this. You know, I'm back to Lance's point. At some point, home field advantage, you know, with the Bumblebee jerseys and introducing the 40th year of the Terrible Towel, you know, that's going to have to take some kind of precedence at some point during that game, man. I'm going to let you guys go, but I really love the show, man. I'm going to keep calling you. I'm going to be like Vito. So y'all take care.
Hey,
right,
thanks
now
for the call, Melvin.
Jeff,
hey, it's always great for me. Go ahead.
To your point, Jeff, you know, with Ben Roethlisberger, you're not afraid of third and 8, or you're not afraid of third and 10. So, you know, you don't necessarily have to run the football with Le'Veon the first two downs consistently to keep your backup quarterback and the offense on schedule. You know, with the franchise guy, you know, you can get off schedule and like, okay, we're fine. We'll get this 3rd and 10. You know, we've got AB, we've got Martavis, we've got Wheat. We'll get this 3rd and 10. You know, we'd like to stay on schedule more consistently, but we're not afraid of 3rd and 7, 3rd and 8, 3rd and 9, 3rd and 10. He'll handle the blitz, and we'll get it out, and we're going to convert this. With a backup quarterback, you've got to play it more conservatively and keep the offense on schedule because you don't know if those guys can handle those down and distances consistently like a Ben Roethlisberger.
Yes, indeed. And I'm getting kind of amped up for this game now. We're talking about these keys. We're talking about whether the Steelers are going to win. This is a game that reminds me a lot of that Arizona Cardinals game. The Steelers are home underdogs, just as they were going into Week 6 when Bruce Arians came in. The early opening line was the Cincinnati Bengals giving 2.5 points, I believe. I think that line might have moved down to 2 now that Roethlisberger is almost for certain going to play. The Steelers are rarely home underdogs. Let's talk some predictions here. Let's go ahead, Lance. I'll go ahead with you first. Go ahead and get your prediction. What are you saying, score-wise, everything?
No, you go first, Joy. Joy, make your pick. Come on, Joy.
Okay, all right, that's fine. Okay, well, I'll give you my pick. That's okay. I think it's going to be a shootout. I think that those the Steelers offense and the Bengals, people forget the Bengals had a bye in week 7. They had 2 weeks to prepare for this. However, they haven't had 2 weeks to really prepare for Ben Roethlisberger, and that's going to be the big thing. Ben Roethlisberger has proven through his Todd Haley system that he is able to win games without having those big seven-step drops that get quarterbacks killed sometimes. I think the offensive line is going to do just enough. I think that the defense is going to create some turnovers. I think they're going to need two somehow, some way. I don't care if it's a special teams turnover or a fumble or an interception or just Andy Dalton looking weird. They need two turnovers, and I think that that's going to seal the deal. I have Pittsburgh winning this game by a final score of 34-31. 34-31. It's going to come down to the end. It's going to be exciting. I'm really surprised that this game is still 1 o'clock. But nonetheless, CBS actually protected it. Go ahead, Lance. What's your prediction?
Well, I'm going to be sadness. And you know I'm going to pick the other way. I think Cincinnati right now is the better football team. I think they're playing more consistently on both sides of the football. But I think it's going to be a very close game. But I'm going to pick the Bengals to win this game, 31-28. I think the Steelers will mix a turnover in there and get a big special teams play instead of the other turnover, the second turnover that they're calling for. But I think Andy Dalton game winning field goal, and I think the Steelers win the game 31-28 in a very hotly contested ball game in Heinz Field.
Wait a second. Time out. You started off by saying you're going to pick the Bengals, and at the end you said you're picking the Steelers. Who do you have winning this football game?
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm picking the Bengals. I'm picking the Bengals 31-28. Sorry if I messed that up, listeners. I'm picking the Bengals 31-28. Andy Dalton drives them down for a late score to get the victory on a game-winning field goal. So sadness,
all right, that...
again, is picking the Bengals.
Well, let me bring in my partner in crime, another joy character of the show. That's our producer, Chris Carter. CC, go ahead and give us your prediction. I know who you're going to pick, but let's hear how it's going to pan out.
You know, I wasn't able to be on the line last week to give Lance what for picking against the Steelers. I don't know if he did, but Lance, come on, man. Can you ever just be the guy that in a big game or against a tough opponent is saying we're going to come out victorious? Dang it, Lance. Anyways, I see the Steelers coming out on top of this, of course, because I'm a real Steelers fan. I don't pick other teams. But Steelers do have a legitimate fan. People don't understand that they are actually they won eight of the last 10 against the Bengals. And while that doesn't matter what happens on the field, it speaks to how they've been able to dominate this team in the past, even when the Bengals have been a very good team. Ben Roethlisberger being back, you're right. It'll be a question of can he find his rhythm. But one thing that I think when you count into the statistic that he's 2-4 when he in his first game back after missing multiple games, he's a completely different quarterback than what he has been in those years. Ben Roethlisberger now is calling plays from the sideline, telling Mike Vick what he should do. He is reading defenses much faster, accomplishing things at a much better rate. And he looks like a better pre-snap quarterback that can adjust and realize, hey, I can't run around and hold up plays for 13 seconds and then just drop a dime, 20 yards down the field. I'm gonna have to do this with my head and not just my legs and my arm. So I expect Ben to not have as much problems coming back into the lineup. I don't think they'll be putting up 43 points like they did to the Niners, but I do think that they will have enough success to win the game. I'm saying the Steelers are going to win 31-24. I think the Bengals are going to turn first. If people remember, yes, A.J. Green can light us up, but one thing people need to remember, Antoine Blake in the last game, he had a key forced fumble on A.J. Green that really helped turn the tide of the game late. And also, Bryce McCain had a pick while in coverage on A.J. Green. It is not impossible to get to these guys. I think their offensive line has improved. I think that they really should fight the red zone, the Bengals will try to do. We'll try to find mismatches, and we'll cover this on film room in a day or two. But the one thing that they love to do is they love to motion people around and try to get Tyler Eifert on single coverage against a cornerback, and especially, you know, they'll be looking for our smaller cornerback, and then just throw a fade and just try to give him a shot at a jump ball. That is something that I guarantee you the Steelers will see, and I really hope that they're planning for it, because I do think the Bengals will probably score with it, because even if they plan for it, it's going to be tough to stop. It's a quick stop, throw, and go for a quarterback. So I do think the Bengals will be able to put up points, but I also think the Steelers will get some turnovers, and I think the offense will be just good enough to put the points up. And I think we're going to see big days from Le'Veon Bell, Antonio Brown, and then a big play, maybe not a big day overall, but a big play from Martavis Bryant. So I got 31-24 Steelers.
There you have it, folks. I said 34-31. You said it's 31-24, and Lance picked the Bengals. Who cares? Who cares what he thinks anymore? All right. So that's how we're going to end the show tonight. Make sure you check BehindTheSteelCurtain.com early and often for all your Pittsburgh Steelers needs. We have some great film room pieces that are going to be coming up on the website tomorrow, as well as leading up to the Bengals game in Week 8 this Sunday. Make sure you also join myself and Chris Carter for the Steelers Final Score, our post-game call-in show where you can call in, gripe, complain, yell, scream, celebrate, whatever you want, right here on Blog Talk Radio and on BehindTheSteelCurtain.com. As for Chris, as for Lance, and myself, we appreciate you listening. We'll see you next time. Bye.